At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome back to another Blunt Business here on CannabisRio.com. Thank you again for joining us and how you find the show, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, and other places. We really appreciate you finding us here and on the Cannabis Radio app, as always. So my next guest, he's been on here on Cannabis Radio before, but not on Blunt Business. This is his first time here on the program, but he's a passionate innovator and product developer with over a decade of experience across both the alcohol and cannabis industries. Director, head of cannabis at the Boston Beer Company, where he leads the company's Canadian cannabis division. And I'm here with the head of cannabis at Boston Beer Company, Paul Weaver. Thanks for being on with us, Paul.
Jorge, nice to see you again.
Good to hear from you. Well, had you on Plant Promise previously, and we've it's been quite a run for the first time we got to hear from you, because it was during the time that Boston Beer Company, which, if you did not know, the Massachusetts-based maker of Samuel Adams, best known as, you launched recently, a couple of years ago, a line of THC-infused iced tea, Teapot, which contains 5 milligrams of THC, and you've been adding some new flavors in the last year or so, adding into the lineup, including mango green tea, blueberry chamomile, and blackberry Rubios. And that's all to your lineup of infused teas designed to complement different times of day. Now, at the time when you launched Teapot, you spoke about starting off slow. So 2 years in, talk about the rollout and response to a hard tea brand like Teapot.
Well, yeah, and thanks for that introduction. Like, Boston Beer is best known as Samuel Adams, but actually, for some of your listeners, we might actually be best known as Twisted Tea. Like, we are
that too.
A Twisted Tea maker, and Twisted Tea is one of the fastest growing alcoholic brands in America. And so we know how to make a really good tea. And when we wanted to get into the cannabis space, our instincts were, well, let's do what we do best. And we know how to make a really great tasting, ready to drink, non-carbonated iced tea. But how would we do that in cannabis? So we took the concept of our Twisted Tea recipe, and then we evolved that to kind of how a cannabis consumer consumes cannabis, which is really about different times of day. So Teapot makes different types of tea for different times of day. We've got daytime iced teas, and we have evening iced teas. We've got caffeinated black teas and green teas, and we have non-caffeinated chamomile, and it's pronounced rooibos. Regret to choosing that particular type of tea, but it does taste amazing. Our blackberry rooibos is super epic. We definitely started very small. You know, our goal was to just understand how to make a great tasting tea, make sure we were onto something special, and then kind of appropriately scale that with new flavors and new markets and more stores. So now Teapot is sold in, over 1,000 dispensaries across Canada. Wow. It's sold coast to coast. We're just getting into Newfoundland. So we'll be in the Maritime provinces of Canada, out in the Newfie territory in about a month. We're doing really well. We're the number one selling edible in the province of Quebec. And things are going really well for us. We think we were on something really special with Teapot.
I can imagine. And now you make the point also with the fact that, it's your company that has quarter of the market in terms of where you might have, other companies that will do the seltzers, do the malts, or do lemonades. And some others have done certain other products that are either standalone. But again, Twisted Tea, that's the most recognizable name I see out there of any of the hard teas out there. Everybody else has kind of like just been following the leader ever since. What I want to ask about is that when it comes to cannabis beverages, especially when it comes to finding Teapot and, finding it in the refrigerated section of the dispensary, and thinking about changing the habit of consumers that would normally go into a liquor store, to go into a supermarket, and they would go find, whatever beverages they want, and kind of being stuck in that habit, and getting people to kind of change that habit to go to a dispensary, and how much space in a dispensary is dedicated to cannabis beverages. Talk to me about that in terms of the change you've had in the last couple of years of that, when it comes to where you're putting TPA onto shelves?
Well, it's a great question, and I think it really reflects the two realities of the cannabis industry, which is, you know, I mean, you're in Florida, like, you know better than anybody, kind of this nuance of hemp versus marijuana that's going on, right?
Yeah.
In the old school marijuana route, right, where we're selling in licensed dispensaries, it's still flower is king, pre-rolls, vapes. That's what drives the vast majority of revenue in dispensaries, because you're really speaking to stoners and you're trying to get the illicit market consumer and really tried and true cannabis users to buy legal. That's kind of the narrative. So trying to get new people, we call them civilians, trying to get new civilians that are interested in cannabis, that are a little intimidated by dispensaries, to actually walk into a dispensary is very challenging. So to offer dispensaries unique products that are not intimidating, that are have a great taste to them, they don't smell or taste like weed, they've got an easy to understand proposition, that's what brings new people in. And so what you're seeing is cannabis beverages are still a very small percentage of dispensary sales, but it's one of the few growing categories in established legal markets, because it's bringing new people into the category. And that's true in California, and it's true in Canada. It's one of the truths of dispensaries is it is small, but one of the bright growing spots of the old school dispensary model. But it's still a very single can driven category, because you're right, they don't have the capacity in the back for large fridges to store cases and cases of product.
Right.
Most dispensaries now, I find, do have fridges. Most dispensaries, I find, are selling cold beverages, but they're selling individual cans. They're not selling cases. You juxtapose that.
I think about the fact that, well, that's part of the dispensary model that comes in. Because, I mean, again, edibles, we've been consumables, you know, in this, Vernon Davis would say, consumables. The whole idea in the space now is that we're getting a lot more variety of product, and that the dispensary model, you know, at some point, they're going to have to realize that, you know, of how much edibles and how much beverages, I mean, figurative beverages, are going to take over the model, because, you know, we can wait to go ahead and see for cannabis-based beverages to get onto alcohol store shelves, be placed in the same aisles as alcohol. But until then, does the dispensary model at some point need to go and reconfigure to be more of a convenience store type, more of a bodega type, where you are consuming, you're putting some other products in there, but you're showcasing your flower, you're showcasing your vapes, you're showcasing your concentrates, you're showcasing your beverages, but it's like, it takes up a whole convenience store model more than a dispensary model, which you could put in like either, you know, converting a bank or a storefront, that you should actually convert it into something more of a multi-purpose store.
Well, I mean, I think that the it's a great idea, right? Like, you have ultimately, our customer, or hey, like, who we sell to is not actually the drinker. Like, we create products that appeal to our drinkers and want our drinkers to love us and buy us and get some brand loyalty, but ultimately our customer who buys our product are stores, retailers. They buy cases from us and then they break those out and sell them to individuals. So we're all about value creation. How do we add value to your dispensary? Is it a unique program that bundles, like we talk about, we're working on a program right now called the Cottage Survival Kit. Sure. And it's a little stock up backpack of things you can bring up to your cottage or cabin for the summer. That's got a 6-pack of Teapot, a pack of pre-rolls and gummies, and some other fun merch ideas to bring up the cottage. Bundle that up. All of a sudden now the retail price for that buyer went from $20 to $50, where they're buying more stuff. How do we add more value to a dispensary? And how can beverages both bring new customers in, that's incremental money, and increase the basket size of that dispensary per person, so that they like drinks, they see drinks as a value add to their business?
I like the idea of all that. I think the little care package, especially in the summertime. But that's the part I'm looking at, just that, you know, we're going to look at some numbers now. We're going to go into a lot of information when it comes to edibles and beverages that I want to go and get your take on. So let's start off with this. And then I also want to just kind of incorporate what I just mentioned there about, you know, what is it that needs to be done to help kind of serve the market, to help continue the growth in that sector. So going into that, Cannabis Business Times recently reported that while daily cannabis consumption now outpaces daily consumption of alcoholic beverages, that's an important point. That now cannabis consumption, so beverages of cannabis infusion, now outpaces daily consumption of alcohol. And cannabis, and that's in the U.S., by the way, cannabis beverages continue to comprise a small percentage of the overall market. BDS Analytics, you know, they reported in the first quarter of 2024 that cannabis beverages brought in $50 million in total retail sales across their tracked markets. So that's Arizona, California, Colorado, Florida, Illinois, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, Missouri, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Oregon, Pennsylvania. And they represent a 6% dollar share of total edible sales and a 1% share of total cannabis sales. So like I said, a lot of room for growth, but still for that, still be a still relatively new sector, you know, 5-6 years coming in. And now that's the part I'm looking at, is that I mentioned, you know, would there be something that should be done in terms of the space? What are some of the things that could be done in the marketplace that hasn't been done yet that could help expand on that growth? If you were looking to talk to those dispensaries and you had a little bit of say of saying, what can we do to kind of maximize the space that we have in there that could warrant additional space for your products to go on the shelves?
Those numbers are probably accurate, right? And I think they really reflect, again, this duality of hemp versus marijuana. Yeah. Because in those tracked markets, those are dispensary markets, and cannabis beverages represent a really small percentage of dispensary sales.
Mm-hmm.
Then you see what's going on in, let's say, a state like Minnesota, where cannabis beverages are sold in liquor stores. And it's selling more than craft beer. It's selling more than vodka. It's selling more than any single varietal of wine. It is disrupting beverage alcohol to its core.
Yeah.
Because it's in the right access point. It's sold in liquor stores. It's in the periphery of a beverage buyer. Because a lot of people, when they buy beverages, they're buying, they're stocking up. And that's important to kind of disrupt that shopping habit and show a new alternative. Hemp-based cannabis-infused beverages that are sold, like Delta-9 THC beverages that are sold under the Farm Bill, when they're sold in liquor stores, really, really fly. And that's what's really the exciting opportunity for cannabis drinks, is when you can put them in the right retail channel, like a liquor store. What's an interesting nuance to that, though, Jorge, is your core question, right? Which is that, well, how do you use cannabis beverages to motivate sales in a dispensary where still, you know, 80% of sales are in flower, vape, and pre-rolls? Because even edibles is still a small segment of the overall cannabis category.
Right.
But it's the only thing growing. You know, in California, where industry is down like 4%, drinks are up 3%. And it's like, okay, well, how do we flip that? Where the growth of the industry, the small segment, but the warm little center of growth is drinks. How do we lead into that? Is that expanding to have more beverage-focused dispensaries, focusing on how beverage alcohol does it, which is stock up, cases, really try and, you know, focus on seasonal displays and understand kind of how beverage alcohol moves cases instead of cans. I think that's the paradigm shift. If dispensaries really want to lean into beverages and lean into that growth, because liquor stores are doing it for them right now through hemp, and they're really seeing success.
One of the other areas we can look at as well, which is relatively new as well, we have consumption lounges now that are sprouting up all over the country. Alaska, California, Colorado, Illinois, Massachusetts, Michigan, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, and more than interesting enough, Nevada, especially in Las Vegas. We're seeing a real start of consumption lounges. Is that something where you feel like, while there's dispensaries, that we do need to dial looking at a sector where consumption lounges can be standalone? And, you know, in back in the day, I remember seeing where you could go to a bar and they had a packaged liquor store. Like, it was either you could buy packaged liquor from the bar, or you bought it from like a side store. Is that something that could be a concept that could be reintroduced for the cannabis space, get a license for that and make it a consumption lounge?
How much time do we have for, hey, we're going to talk? I feel like we could talk about this for an hour because I love this topic. I love this consumption lounges. I love bars. I love the concept of restaurants. But I've been thinking about it for so long that it's kind of evolved from just the novelty of it to like, okay, what's actually the business? How do we actually make money there? Because bars are petty for profit businesses, right? They're very tight business models. Are there any consumption lounges in your neighborhood? Have you been to any in Florida?
No, we don't have any in Florida yet. But the thing is, I mean, okay, it would be different because you're not selling anything on draft. So you don't have to worry about, like, maybe you don't have to worry much about glasses. You're just worrying more about bottles. Plus, I would think the concept now these days of, you know, you're not even seeing as many bars as many there are, like, Kava bars or Java bars. Like, you're getting, or hookah bars. Like, there's a lot of change where what the bars represent and what they're doing. They're not even, like, you know, it's not even the same products that you had before where you're stocked with, like, top shelf. And you're stuck with, like, what, five or six, you know, taps of draft. You have to keep constantly up and chilled or whatever, making sure you pour a Guinness just the right way. You know, the bartenders, what they have to serve, just pop open a top. They don't really do much more than that and just make sure to take care of. Plus, again, selling, you know, they'll always see those bars will have coolers or whatnot in the back. They can go and pull up front, and they can go and sell right from the bar. So if somebody wanted to go and do that, I think the consumption lounge, in that respect, the liquor lounges themselves, your conventional bars are changing much anyway because there's, you know, not a lot of people are going to it. Plus, the same thing could go where, you know, if you can find your way into a concert venue and, you know, we already know that in concerts as well, live events, more younger people, more Gen Z, you know, are drinking less alcohol and they're going for more beverages like cannabis. There's a lot of room to go where you can go and where you can find the drinkers at. And I think creating that consumption lounge with a new concept, because there's other concepts out there already in play to do the same thing.
I think about just absolute revenue, yeah. Right? So, like, let's say you and I want to open a cannabis restaurant, bar, lounge thing. And we could just open a bar or a restaurant, and we could be making up a bulk of our revenue through selling a lot of booze and food items, and that's kind of makes X amount of money per week to cover our rent and our staff and our expenses. How do we ensure that we get as much, if not more, revenue selling cannabis-infused products, knowing that they're probably drinking less absolute liquid, right? Like,
right.
You're like, I don't know your vibe, but like, let's say if I'm going out for the night, maybe four or five beers, and I'm having like a good experience that's going to last for a few hours.
Right.
Am I having four or five cannabis drinks? Or am I having one or two or three? Or what's the dosing of that? How much are you charging for that? Do you need to charge cover? Do you need to make it more about an experience where there's like a comedy show or live music or trivia or, you know, a magician? What's the thing that's going to keep you in and engaged and entertained? And we're made whole one way or the other with the absolute amount of revenue that we brought in from it. And then also, like, what are the bylaws and underlying laws to kind of govern that, to ensure that it's a safe space, that the staff isn't hotboxed, that people are not over-served, how is driving handled? It opens up tons of these really fun questions that we get to answer. And really, we're only going to learn that through trial and error, like the consumption lounges in Vegas, what's going on in West Hollywood. Even the bars in Minnesota, these hemp drinks, their bars selling these weed drinks, and this guy had fallen. So I think it's just observing empirically how we incorporate this into a traditional restaurant model and figure out how we make the most amount of revenue from it. And then people will exploit that and make franchises, and there'll be like an Applebee's version of cannabis in Apple Trees. We'll call it Apple Trees.
Right. But then, you know, one thing that's going to be what you need to go and put a microscope on, California. So in Sacramento, the California legislature now is putting a bill in front. It's Assembly Bill 1775, and it's already passed through the Senate's Business, Professions, and Economic Development Committee on Monday of this week, as we're recording this in mid-June, and it'll advance to the Senate floor. And then the chance will be that Governor Newsom will have a chance to sign it, if so, and it would ensure separation between cannabis consumption and food areas and lounges, and allow businesses to sell tickets to events like music performances. Yeah, so I think when it comes to the consumption lounge...
So you can serve food and cannabis drinks, or you do cannot?
So food and non-alcoholic beverages. But that would be the plan of this bill.
And then
it would augment what existing lounges can serve.
Yeah. I think if you can bring food into the equation, I think the people will figure out how to make fun experiences. You know, there's a restaurant here in Toronto...
Uh-huh.
Jorge, called Au Noir. And Au Noir is this experience restaurant where it's pitch black. You eat in the black. There's absolutely no light.
Right.
And it's supposed to be this like sensory experience, and you know, all your senses are heightened. I don't know what the pitch is. It's a little expensive. Everyone I know that's been there has been there exactly one time.
Right.
You go there, it's an experience, cool. I'm going to do something else. And I think that's the risk of consumption lounges. If we make it too much about just the concept of infusing food with THC, then it's a novelty. It's just a one and done experience, and you're hoping for tourists or the blogosphere to kind of promote it. What's the tried and true daily, weekly business that has people coming in and out, and that's where they want to go on their Thursday night? And it starts with clear regulations, which it sounds like the state of California is about to unveil. And then smart entrepreneurs will take that and run with it, and we'll figure out how we bring our brands to life, and we put the right neon sign, and we'll buy the pool table, and we'll try and make Teapot, a visible presence in that restaurant. But first step is someone has to bite the bullet and say that's the business I want to be in. And then we'll, just like we do with dispensaries, we'll be a good partner, and we'll add some value where we can.
Right. Well, we can imagine either California or Nevada. We can see if somebody will go ahead and take that chance to kind of make the reach. Part of it is they got to figure out, okay, if it's smoking, they probably might have an issue with because of the Clean Indoor Air Act of any other restaurant.
No, you can't smoke. No smoke.
Right.
You don't smoke cigarettes. Like, the fact that people think you can have a cannabis lounge and smoke inside is so naive. Like, step outside, smoke whatever you want, and that should be the ingoing assumption.
Or like an outdoor patio where you can go to the back and it's an open air, right.
Just open air. Like, that, it's maybe not as bad as cigarettes, but it should be viewed the same philosophy because you're going to open... Even vaping to a certain extent. So yeah, I think we have to consider your fellow patrons and keep a clean air in the restaurant, regardless if it's vape or smoke, and have air lounge areas outside.
Plus also get to the part of, I remember going to the clubs or bars and always sampling new drinks by, okay, here's a cute girl coming across with test tubes. Here's got a couple of drinks. Here's a little shot for you. Let's take a taste of it yourself. You find out.
I'll
tell you that always worked for me because it was always a matter of like, okay, a little bit of sampling, a little bit of, taste testing, especially when you go in there, and if it gets people to go and get locked into it, the more the better. But I think the consumption lounge idea, it's something like that to me, that would be, I want to see where that particular storefront, that concept goes and what they can do with that, because that's where I think beverages would go ahead and just explode. And yeah, we have to worry about if it's live entertainment, if it's karaoke, if it's, arcade kind of gear, whatever you got in there, virtual reality, whatever you want to do, something that will just keep people inside and keep them out there for like all night and just go ahead and enjoy.
There's a great spot in outside of the Strip in Vegas called Nuwu, N-U-W-U. Nuwu is one of the first like legit consumption lounges that had a really solid business model and really good logistics. And part of their approach, this is funny. I'm not sure if we want to move on, but like this is just a funny takeaway. The lights in there were so bright.
Right.
In a good way. Because it prevented anyone from falling asleep.
Wow.
So like just these, and they have like almost bottle service. You would buy like a tray of, it would be like a prefix price of like, I don't even know, like $100. And they bring you like a boatload of pre-rolls and drinks and infused products and some snacks. And it was like, okay, they covered their tab by making it one flat rate.
Right.
So they'd have to worry about kind of the volume of frequent purchases. They just kind of brought in a bunch of stuff and you pay one fixed rate. You're there for 2 hours. They make sure you're gone at 2 hours and the lights are bright so that no one's greeting out and falling asleep in a chair. It's just like really smart, practical ways
right.
of realizing the differences between alcohol and cannabis and how a bar experience would need to flex and try something new.
Nice. We'll get into that conversation more. We'll let the audience go ahead and kind of foster into that. Although the gang, what their take is out on this. And, this is something I want to keep an eye on. If, really about the last year or so when consumption lounges started to become a real commonplace, I want to keep following on that and see where it goes. And then obviously we can always come back and revisit this again, bring you on back on and talk about it once we get to that point.
Well, there's people dedicating their whole careers to it too. And I'm happy to introduce you to some of my friends that are like, that's what they want to do. They're trying to like pioneer the logistics and safety and certifications and standards and practices for a really well-run cannabis lounge.
Exactly. I'm here with Paul Weaver, head of cannabis at Boston Beer Company here on Blunt Business. When we come back, we're going to talk about, we just mentioned before about, cannabis-based beverages are now outpacing alcohol in the U.S. We're going to talk about that and more. A survey from Philadelphia Tribune, and they talk about a survey from the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, an annual government survey, and we'll learn what the study actually tells us about that. We're going to talk more with Paul about that after a short break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Welcome back. I'm here with Paul Weaver, head of cannabis at Boston Beer Company, also the makers of Teapot, which we mentioned really at the start of the program. The use of cannabis to replace alcohol is a growing trend in the United States, and the Philadelphia Tribune actually put out a story. They cited a recent survey from the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, which is an annual government survey. For the first time ever, they've seen a survey, the daily use of cannabis of any kind among Americans surpassed the daily use of alcohol. That's a telling sign. That's a real pendulum swing to the other direction. So, Paul, I'll ask you, do you feel like more cannabis companies should be working on more beverage-based offerings to take more consumers away from alcohol? Is that something that you're seeing more of that's happening, and should that be encouraged?
Yeah, of course. I mean, yes, unequivocally, and I don't think that anyone would say otherwise. I mean, I think it's just these two, I'm not doing it right, two lines, right? Like you have every day, well, I don't know about you, Jorge, but COVID really kind of shone a light for me in terms of my own alcohol consumption, what I was consuming. And I think post-COVID, everyone's relationship with alcohol evolved and people are being more mindful of daily alcohol consumption and a little bit more moderate in terms of their alcohol consumption. And at the exact same time, more markets, more products, more social acceptance of cannabis grows. And, you know, cannabis is awesome. So, like, why wouldn't we see these two lines intersecting and overlapping? So, no, it is a macro Western society trend of people realizing the benefits and awesomeness of cannabis at the same time, you know, revisiting their relationship with alcohol. So if you're a cannabis company, you know, I think you have to balance your product portfolio with short-term and long-term, the short-term of high revenue flower and vape products. But in the interest of lung health, in the interest of kind of going where the trajectory is, being more focused on ingestible products, edible products, and beverage products is the long-term future of our industry. So if you're a cannabis company, you absolutely have to be mindful of the long-term trend towards people balancing out their alcohol and cannabis consumption, and edible products and beverages in particular should definitely be part of that portfolio.
In this survey, they also mentioned how alcohol use and the trend of binge drinking. With that, the idea is that really with alcohol, you really have to go and consume so much to really get the kind of effect that they're looking for, to really get that buzz, to really get, you know, that drunken stupor that you're looking for, if that's what you're looking for, whatever it is. It's like you really have to go through quite a bit, and there's only so many alcoholic beverages that'll have whatever proof by volume that'll really get you to get that kick that you're looking for. But cannabis-infused beverages, not so much. I would imagine you would need to consume less to get the kind of feeling that you want from it. So now, they make the point of is that...
Can I just address that topic, though, Jorge? Because I do think that's reinforcing stigmas on both alcohol and cannabis. You know, I think not everyone drinks to get drunk, and not everyone consumes cannabis to get stoned. And I think this notion of moderation and this notion of light effects, relaxing, moderation is what beer companies are all about. That's what Boston Beer Company is all about. You know, we make beer and low-dose alcoholic beverages. You know, Twisted Tea is a 5% drink. Sam Adams is in the 5%. I think it's 5%. You know, we make drinks for the American beer drinker because that's about moderation and having relaxation but still staying in control. And I think that's what cannabis beverages offer. That's what alcohol, that's what beer offers. It's about being able to relax without needing to, like, go to 100. And I think that the unfortunate reality of all these daily data points that are coming out are people who are probably over consuming either alcohol or cannabis. And, you know, if we're about the vast majority of the population who are looking for light, relaxing adult beverages, that's our wheelhouse. That's our bread and butter. That's what we do, beer and now cannabis. So I think that it just speaks to kind of the stigma of cannabis that it's all about getting blotto. Or alcohol, which somehow it's all about getting just absolutely wrecked. And I think we have historically tried to create great tasting products that are a little bit more about pacing yourself and staying in control.
You mentioned a pandemic earlier before the break about how people really kind of their habits and their consumption habits were really changing. And that's one of the things that was really, I think, is weaned away because of the fact that being kind of, you know, imposed a lockdown and the lack of social, you know, socializing with other people and just staying at home. And for some people to kind of like cope with what was going on, the trauma and the kind of effects they got from it, you know, mentally from it, the idea was to go and, you know, kind of drink your sorrows away, kind of drown it away. Binging, according to the survey here, they said that it was higher in women, sending twice as many to the emergency room during the pandemic than before. And the alcohol-induced death rate for both sexes jumped 26% between 2019 and 2020. And that was the part where I saw that there, and I was just thinking, you know, that's where people are starting to be more cognizant. They don't want to binge drink as much. You know, people are not sitting back just to go ahead and just take it back. And because of the fact of, you know, again, even before cannabis with Twisted Tea or, you know, other seltzers or lemonades and all those out there with a lower alcohol volume, that's helping more. And I think people are just getting more to, you know, used to the idea of not feeling to go ahead and have to binge drink or get to a certain point that kind of abusive, that addiction kind of feel to it. Like, I think more people are getting more accustomed to moderation and feeling like, you know, they're getting a better feel when it comes to cannabis infused beverages than they are for anything else. And that's also because the younger crowd that's out there, they're not following the same thing that millennials or, you know, older generations have done, that alcohol is just not, you know, the way they consume it, or if they consume it, it's completely changed. And that's the part I think was just really wanted about here. I think people are just learning from that. And so we move along from that. And that,
well, I think about my own kind of consumption too, right? Like, was it the Eagles? Some Dance to Remember, Some Dance to Forget, you know? And I think that, like, that's kind of a lot of recreational consumption, right? Are you trying to, you know, escape and avoid kind of the stress of whatever's right in front of you and kind of just forget about it for a moment? Or are you trying to add some spice and liven things up and make yourself laugh a little bit more, remember the good times? You know, I think that's the nuance of any intoxicating product, right? Alcohol or cannabis. It's like, some people are looking to escape and some people are looking to enhance and remember and laugh, and, you know, to each their own. You know, it's a very personal experience. And everyone's relationship with weed in particular is so personal. It's been really fun over the last, you know, I've been working in cannabis now almost, God, going on 7 years now, almost 8 years.
Right.
And everyone's cannabis conversation is different, personal, and unique. And some people use cannabis as a therapeutic tool. Some people use it as like a life enhancer. It's so personal and unique. And I think we just have to be empathetic to our drinkers in terms of what they're really using our product for.
We're going to go back to your rush break. When we come back, we're going to go follow on a little bit more. Philadelphia Tribune also spoke with the founding director of the Center for the Study of Drugs, Alcohol, Smoking, and Health at University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. And wanted to talk about the idea of where it comes to edibles, beverages, consumables in the research process, and what the DEA rescheduling plan that's being finalized now, how that's going to help out. We're going to bring that question up and wrap things up with Paul Weaver, head of cannabis at Boston Beer Company, here on Blunt Business. By the way, if you want to go and look more about Teapot, where you can go find it, and also you want to go and get your hands on the product and go and take a look at it for yourself, the original chilled tea website is drinkteapot.com. Look at the website as we go to commercial break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
We're back with final questions here with Paul Weaver, head of cannabis at Boston Beer Company. And Paul, again, thank you again for being on with us. Real deep conversation we're getting into here, but
I love it. It's not talk about it. You know, I think you can't work in both weed and alcohol like I do and not think about these things. So it's great to discuss it. It's important.
So when I prefaced before the break, I mentioned that we took a story from the Philadelphia Tribune. They spoke with Carol Boyd, founding director of the Center for the Study of Drugs, Alcohol, Smoking, and Health at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, about how research on edibles, baked goods, candies, beverages are mentioning here, and other methods of using cannabis is in its infancy, and whether there are longer-term impacts on human health than ingesting too much at one sitting and getting an uncomfortable high are unknown. That's what she's saying here. She says, quote, "We do not yet know the risks of the daily use of edibles. Thus, I cannot say whether the trend will end up as a healthy one. Regulation is uneven. Products vary, and use is still illegal under federal law. We need better data." So now we're going to get the opening up of the DEA rescheduling of cannabis from 1 to 3, and that should open the door for more research. And that's one of those areas I think that will answer those questions, and I think we're going to get some good answers from that. What do you see about that matter of the research is necessary for those that will realize, okay, this is good for us, we can enjoy it in moderation, and, you know, there's no setbacks to it?
Well, I mean, I think it's important to have objective, clinically sound research right. to address any final skeptics about the benefits and relative advantages of consuming cannabis products, particularly edible products. I mean, anecdotally, and in Canada, we've been developing edible food products under federal regulations with licenses and testing protocols for, you know, many years now. And so I think, but mostly in, under like a recreational lens and understanding kind of how these products taste and are stable and hold their cannabinoids, not a lot of research on effects or like long-term potential health effects. So I think it's important to have that objective, really laborious clinical approach to this data, just to really address any skeptics about just how awesome cannabis can be and the many benefits of it, whether it's as a therapeutic alternative to prescription drugs or a relaxing alternative to alcohol. So yeah, I think more data, the better. I don't think it's going to change any conclusions, because empirically, these are products that have been around for decades and in markets like California and Colorado, explicitly regulated and sold at the state level for a decade too. So no shortage of empirical data. Let's put the clinical lens on it so that, you know, any final skeptics will see it in the most unequivocal terms. But I think rescheduling has a big shift in the overall perceptions of cannabis, and just, you know, this uber authority of the federal government acknowledging that maybe they got it wrong and maybe cannabis does have value to our society, like mission accomplished just by making that shift from 1 to 3, and to say nothing of the financial benefits, particularly from the tax, the tax shit that all of our US-based MSO partners have to deal with. That's a huge weight off of their shoulders. So good for the business to just get it from 1 to 3. Good for society's perceptions of cannabis to see the federal government acknowledge the misstep. And then all the endless amount of clinical data that's going to come for it, that's going to say, yeah, it's not a consequence-free product. There is no such thing as a consequence-free product. Everything has its limits. But relative to the alternatives, it's a really, really fantastic plant with a lot of value. So yeah, bring it on.
So website is drinkteapot.com. Let's get back to the product itself. So again, drinkteapot.com. You can buy a teapot online through Leafly, Weed Maps, and HiBuddy. In person at select Canadian dispensaries all across Canada. And real quickly, what can you tell us right now about, you know, we're getting access to get their hands on teapot, and
yeah,
also you know, the products you got out there that you're getting a lot out there off the shelves.
Yeah, so teapot is a low dose cannabis iced tea. It's only 5 milligrams of THC per can, and it's designed for both the cannabis curious person who wants to walk into a dispensary and have an easy cannabis experience. It doesn't smell or taste like weed. It won't get them totally beyond stoned. Or the experienced consumer that wants a refreshing alternative to alcohol amidst their other sessions. It's sold in about half the dispensaries now in Canada. We're growing points of distribution every day. And you can find us on drinkteapot.com or our Instagram handle, drinkteapot. It's available on most of those government cannabis websites to buy and deliver to your door, or those independent dispensaries. It's a brand that we're really, really proud of. We really think it's something special. It's got a lot of love from our drinkers, and we try and, you know, pay it back for them. We're working on a lot of fun activities for the summer. We just finished last year a program with Pardons Canada,
yeah,
where we raised $10,000 to help people remove cannabis convictions from their criminal record in Canada. And we're working on some really fun programming this summer for Cottage Country and conservation. So, you know, things are going really well for us for Teapot. But the best thing is it just tastes great. It doesn't taste or smell like weed. It's low dose. It's non-carbonated. It's under 100 calories. Yeah, it's a great alternative for your summer vibes.
And a lot of, again, you know, when you think about tea flavors and what's been out there, I mean, the lineup that you have right now, what you have available, and the flavor quotient on that lemon black tea or mango green, blueberry chamomile, blackberry, how do you say that? How do you say that one more time?
Rooibos.
Rooibos. Okay, here we go.
Yeah, blackberry rooibos. Yeah, and those evening teas are great. They're like, they are my favorite products we make because they're under, it's like 30, 40 calories a can, virtually no sugar, no caffeine. It's a perfect alternative to your glass of wine, 5 milligrams of THC with a nice relaxing tea.
Yeah.
Perfect way to end your day on a high note. And those two products are both available in Ontario dispensaries right now.
Fantastic. Again, 5 milligrams of THC. And also, I do see you have what would not be your daddy's Arnold Palmer and Lemonade Iced Tea and Sativa Dominant Canvas as well. That's great stuff. Paul, really appreciate you taking time to go and join us here. And thanks again for being on. Again, we'll keep an eye on what's going on right now with consumables and, see where consumption lodges go. Great conversation. Let's go ahead and table a chance to go ahead and talk about this again.
No, thanks, Jorge. Thanks for the platform, and thanks for all you do for spreading the good word. And I look forward to chatting again.
Our pleasure. And again, thank you, listeners, for listening in. We appreciate you always listening in every week. And we're coming all the way up to 400 episodes sooner than we know it. I can't believe it's already gotten that far. Thank you for listening in. We'll talk to you next time.